all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800.
You can help support Veterans Radio by going to our website, VeteransRadio.net, and either sponsoring us with some buddy money, you know, that's a donation maybe of $10 a month or even $100 that will keep us on the air. And you can also go to our website to our new Veterans Radio Exchange. We have a brand new swag store, and we'd like to have our super fans help us get the word out about Veteran Radio by wearing our gear and making a purchase that helps support and fund this ongoing effort. So remember, go to VeteransRadio.net and help us out. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Ed Gore. Ed is on to talk to us about Chinese American veterans in World War II. Ed has a unique role among others. He's the National Project Director for the Chinese American Veterans Recognition Project. Ed, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Jim. Really appreciate this wonderful opportunity for me to talk a little bit about this. I was national president of Chinese American Citizens Alliance. It's a 123-year-old organization based in San Francisco that was started out of the response to the treatment of Chinese who were part of the Transcontinental Railroad effort back in those days. And so going forward to today, I had recognized that many of our members who were longtime faithful members who unfortunately could not even join their own American Legion post after they returned from the many wars and conflicts with our United States has had, that they ended up becoming members of Chinese American Citizens Alliance so many years. And I decided, though, that back in 2016, I guess it was, that this would be something for us to recognize them to do because they were so faithful paying dues. You know, we all love people who pay dues, right? So we thought that was I thought it'd be a wonderful way to do it. Even though probably 85-90% of them are no longer with us, still, it's a memory for the families to recognize that the United States Congress has recognized their contribution to the states. And further on, you know, people like myself basically walk in the shadows or on the backs of our mothers and fathers and grandparents for doing that. So that was what the impetus was for me to do this. And it's been a really rewarding effort, Jim. Anything to do with veterans, I have just truly embraced over the last several years.
Well, this is an interesting slice of history that you really don't hear much about, and that's why I wanted to talk about it with Ed Gore here on Veterans Radio, and that is the number of Chinese Americans who served in World War II. We might think about some of the other groups, but we don't necessarily think about our Chinese American citizens. Can you talk to us about how many people served and kind of what roles they served in?
Yeah, it's a very small number in terms of the big picture, but let me just give you some statistics that we've been able to find. So we approximate about 18 to 20,000 Chinese Americans served in actually all branches of the military, including the Merchant Marines. This is really the only bill that actually recognizes contribution of the Merchant Marines in addition to the major branches that we all know of. But if you contrast 18,000 with the fact that there were only in the 1940s census, there were only 100,000 Chinese in the entire country at the time. That's 18 to 20% of the population chose to either enlist or were drafted into the military. And of course, as I said, they served in all branches across the country, and many times they served in much anonymity because they had not the highest ranking types of positions, just because of how they entered the country. Many of them having language difficulty, and others just not having sufficient skills. But they ended up being and learning much from the military. Some did take advantage eventually of the GI Bill, but you're right in terms of being in the Navy. Many were ship stewards in the Army. My father himself was an administrative guy, but actually learned to be a mechanic for the P-40s, the famous Flying Tiger airplanes back in the day. So he took that mechanics training, I guess, and you know, the grocery store. So that's kind of where he went from there. But many of them served in very, you know, average things. And we always say that an army, you know, only goes so far as his stomach is filled. And so many of them were the chefs and the cooks for many of the outfits that they were part of. So, yes, it's a little bit of an unknown story because there were, again, not that many. But the main difference about Chinese Americans versus some of the other units, such as the Japanese who served like the 442nd, was that we were not in segregated units. Everyone was deployed across, as I said, all of the branches of the military that we have. So,
and that's a really, I want to stop you there. Don't rush through this because that's a big point. If you're thinking about the 1940s, the Chinese Americans are serving, 75% of them served in non-segregated units. It wasn't an all-black unit. It wasn't an all-Japanese unit. It wasn't an all-Hispanic unit. They were integrated. That was pretty radical then.
It was, Jim. And the other backdrop or the backstory behind why this is such an important issue for us, for the country, at least to recognize it. I won't say anything more that they were more heroic or more brave or courageous, but the fact that they stepped to the serve in spite of, if you remember, you know, my history is bad too, because I'm a STEM person. The fact that the Chinese Exclusion Act, which was, you know, started, which was passed in 1882, was in effect throughout the entire time and was not repealed until the war was not quite over, but it took that repeal of the Chinese Exclusion Act for China to actually come on board with helping the U.S. over in the Far East during that period of time as well. So, you know, another important part of this was also this many served who were enlisted served as interpreters in the field for many of the generals and the staff who were out in the field in the Far East when they were out there in the Pacific. So that was another important aspect of it. And just, you know, just like today, what's interesting to me, I found out all these, I will call them secret units that are out there doing reconnaissance, all kinds of intel positions, and they need all kinds of people doing this, and included among that group are many Chinese who served over there, and they were recruited, actually, in some cases, over in China while they were serving.
Well, I think it's important for folks to realize really the strength of our country. We recognize as our diversity, and that diversity includes the contributions of our Chinese Americans during this time of war and coming forward. I was surprised to read that a quarter of those Chinese American veterans would serve in the what was then was the Army Air Force, right? And that's a whole nother area where we can vision up the Flying Tigers, but that's a you know that was a risky business then, wasn't it, to have a quarter of those guys doing that?
Oh, absolutely. I come to find as I drag these stories out of some of the ones that, including my father and my father-in-law, you know, they rarely wanted to talk about these things, but it wasn't until much later, and even with the living veterans that we've been able to interview today, that some of these things were extremely risky ventures to be part of this entire effort. And the ground crews, which is where many of the Chinese Americans served as far as being part of the Flying Tiger units, were integral to the, obviously, it's the success of this. And I think there was a, There must have been a that hidden STEM feature that I hate to stereotype with most Asian Americans, but there must have been some kind of a hidden STEM feature that caused these men and women, as a matter of fact. And let me not forget the women as well, because there were actually two Chinese American women who were part of the Women Air Service pilots who actually flew as well. And of course, we all know that because of the discrimination against the females back in those days, many were not allowed to fly on combat missions, but mostly doing transport in those days. So there was also a great contribution. I don't want to forget about the women who in the field even were nurses during that period of time.
One of the things I think the military is good at is sort of determining what your aptitude is and putting you to work there. And I think that's what sort of what you're saying is, geez, they ran these guys through their battery of tests and said, you might be a grocery store owner, but you have the aptitude to handle jet mechanics or flight mechanics. We're going to move you over to mechanics thing. And that created opportunities for Chinese American veterans service members who wouldn't otherwise probably have seen those opportunities.
Oh, you're absolutely correct. And you kind of a little bit more about the history that I've kind of learned. Of course, back in the 20s and 30s, there was tremendous famine and drought in China in those days. So many of the original, I call them the original, came over during that period were from southern China, from a village called Taishan. So anyway, that is where most of them came from back in those days. And that's why I would say without their contribution, their participation, if you will, in things like the war, and of course, after the war, they came back home and created, jobs, careers, started families, became part of the community, even though most of us are still only about 5% of any population in any city today that has very many, except in California, of course, there's greater numbers. But for the most part, even for that small number of people, I believe that they've made a great impact upon the many things, though mostly done in silence, if you will.
Well, there's one other statistics, and then we're going to turn to the Congressional Medal that I think is telling, and it gets lost because, again, it's not big numbers, but it tells you something about this community's patriotism, and that is the statistics, I believe, indicate that about 8% of the soldiers completing basic training are of Asian background today, and that's above the population as a whole. So the population as a whole is like 6.8%, but Chinese Americans continue to volunteer and continue to serve their country, don't they?
Yeah, you're totally right. I was just talking to someone today about the fact that today's military is a totally volunteer unit, volunteer groups. And so what you find is the military itself is able to call the system and find out who the best and brightest people are today. And that goes across all spans of ethnicity and gender as well, that now we are able to find people who are truly STEM oriented today, and they go in that direction. And I've personally seen young people who come to work where I used to work, who come out of the military with tremendous attitudes, work ethic as well to do this. So yeah, I agree with you. That whole matter of now how the military is structured is a wonderful opportunity for young people.
Well, we're talking to Ed Gore, who's of Chinese American descent, who is the National Project Director for the Chinese American World War II Recognition Project. That's a mouthful. Ed,
yeah.
Ed, talk to us first about what the recognition is for, and then I'm going to ask you to talk about how people. Maybe who have an ancestor who should be recognized can get involved. But let's start with, what is the recognition?
Well, the recognition amounted to organization mobilizing us people to do the grassroots thing, just like you do any kind of bill in Congress. You have to contact enough congressmen, enough senators to sign on to a bill. And the bill was basically to recognize Chinese Americans who served in World War II between December 7th of 41 through December 31, 1946. And so we went to the Hill, we wrote letters locally, we visited, every district congressman, senator, et cetera. So when it was all said and done, we eventually had enough votes in both houses to pass the bill. And actually both bills actually end up being passed unanimously and, went to the president's desk where President Trump signed the bill into law this past December. And since then, we've been on a real heavy registration process to get this done. So it awards these individuals with the Congressional Gold Medal. Now, we have to locate not only the veteran, but their families who are still living to award this. The public law says, even though there are 18,000, obviously we can't find them all. But the ones that we can locate, there must be a next of kin, or either the veteran, the spouse, if neither are still living, then a next of kin must step forward to be awarded the Congressional Gold Medal on behalf of the veteran. So, and we're hoping to raise enough money such that every veteran will receive a Congressional Gold Medal at no cost to them. And we'll we're just happy to do this, and we're just proud that these it's been a source of real pride in our communities. I could not have imagined what kind of pride this brought to so many people across the country that I've come in contact with, Jim. It's been pretty phenomenal for me to see and experience that myself.
Well, I think anytime you get a recognition, and here we're talking about, you know, one of the highest recognitions maybe that Congress can give you, which is the Congressional Gold Medal. Yes. It's yes. Inspiring. It makes you stop and look and sit up and pay attention. And I think that's what this really does, not only for the individual who gets it, but for the community at large, doesn't it?
It has done that for the community. I have never seen so many people excited who are not just family members of the veteran, but actually the fact that the community now sees that, even though, again, as you said, we're 5 or 6% of the population, that Congress, the body of Congress, has taken the time and deliberated the fact that these young women and men and women back in the 40s were able to come forward and step forward to demonstrate not only their patriotism, but the fact that, you know, we're as American as anyone else. It is our job and our duty to come forward and step and serve for our country, because we're staying. We're going to be here to establish our life, to establish our families, and to contribute to the United States. And that's the message I think that most of them were about back in those days. And it continues to be the message today, I think, that young people, and this was another reason, Jim, I wanted to do this, or our group wanted to do this, is that we wanted to inspire young people, Asian Americans, and as you said, you know, a higher percentage even than our population is serving today. But I still want to continue inspiring these young people to know that their mothers, fathers, grandmothers, grandfathers, uncles, aunts served, mostly in anonymity, but now's the time for them to step forward and see their stories and hear about what they actually did. And I have read some of the most inspiring stories about sacrifice, about courage, people who were POWs, MIAs, of course, and many killed in the action as well, that they have come back to talk about these things because at that time they had some had families in them. And many of them back in those days, because of the Chinese Exclusion Act, actually were never even able to bring their wives over until after the War Brides Act was passed as well. So source of pride, yeah, absolutely, Jim, much pride.
Well, I think the service is a demonstration of commitment to the country, right? When you serve, you're committing yourself, yes, to the country. And I think what's sort of completes the circle now is Congress to recognize that commitment for this particular group of veterans with the Congressional Gold Medal. So, I mean, there's beautiful symmetry here, and it should be something that our younger citizens can focus on and go, I kind of get it. I see how the pieces fit together. If somebody is out there and going, this is the first time I've heard about the Chinese American World War II Veterans Congressional Gold Medal.
Yeah.
And I have ancestors who might be eligible here. How do they get involved? What are the steps here, Ed Gore, National Project Director?
I want to say very simple, and I'll give you these instructions very quickly. The first thing to do is you must go to our official website and register. It's www.caww2.org. So it stands for Chinese American World War, number2.org. And yet, here's the issue that that we've discovered. As you can imagine, people who are still alive, veterans who are still alive, are in their 90s and very unlikely to be very computer proficient or even want to get near a computer. And number two, think of the children of these veterans. Many of them are already in their 60s and 70s themselves. And given the dynamic of that population, maybe half are somewhat computer literate and others may not be. And yet now we have to look at maybe grandchildren or friends who have to step forward to help these veterans register. So you can see it's been a challenge for us. Even when we get the word out, it's a challenge for these individuals and families who want to register to do that. So it's an easy thing to say, let's just register as many as we can. But I got to tell you, it's been part of the challenge. One thing is just the word out, but then you get stumped by the fact that unfortunately, because of how we have to do things today, I can't visit every city and set up a shop somewhere in the library. But it's through programs like yours here that we are able to get the word out a little bit more. And hopefully it just rings a bell to somebody, says, you know, I know someone in my neighborhood, or I know somebody at my assisted living facility, in my independent living facility, or maybe a congregate area where seniors get together, that I know some people who would qualify maybe for getting this recognition. So the easy part is just knowing where our website is. Again, let me get to you, www.caww2.org. And there are instructions to go forward from there, and ways that you can just click on Registered Veterans, and it will take you to the application page. And most of the time, the only thing we require is that they provide some proof of their service and discharge, which is a discharge document demonstrating their service. Now, we will take even as little as a photograph of the veteran in uniform back when they served. And many people have nothing but a uniform. I'm actually almost shocked that some people still have their documents after 75 years, and they still do. So, but we're willing to take the word of the family that the veteran pictured is their father or their grandfather, uncle, who is pictured there. And if they provide, you know, a name and some story about them. So,
well, and I wanted to talk about that, because you have on the website, which is caww2.org, a verification protocol. And I was thinking the same thing. A lot of these guys, you know, that information is not going to be around anymore. But what I do see is that you allow for, you know, newspaper articles where he might be mentioned, or photographs, or maybe you're in a veterans organization roll call at the time from your local town, recognizing who was in service. So if you're out there thinking, I'd like to help Uncle get into this, but I don't know where the documentation is, don't be stopped by that. You guys have really thought your way through, how do we verify this so many years later? And I think there's probably a great deal of flexibility, because you really want the recognition for those men.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are trying not to disqualify someone, as long as they bring forth a very reasonable, very documentable and a point of their service. And so even obituaries, or if they're buried in a veterans cemetery, that also, you know, would be sufficient enough evidence. And there is so much information out there today, and unfortunately, because of the time and period of the war at that time, there was no centralized database, you know, such as they have at as NARA does today, the National Archives Records Administration area. And let me give you the bad news about that. Unfortunately, back in 73, there was a fire in St. Louis at NARA, and it destroyed, unfortunately, many of the records of the Chinese back in that. For some reason, there was that section that they happened to be in that the fire destroyed many of their records. So it's been somewhat difficult for them to even request those records through the National Archives Records Association Administration.
Well, that's why I like, it was nice that you guys have so much flexibility in that. Before we run out of time, I do want you to talk about how the medal will get struck or designed and struck, and when it will be available for presentation.
Yeah, great. We have just finished designing the medal about 3 weeks ago. We worked with the U.S. Mint on that. We had a committee. And I will tell you, the committee was comprised of four retired Army generals, one retired Rear Admiral from the Navy, and three civilians. And so I figured at the time when I found this committee of these individuals, that who's going to argue with four generals and a Navy Admiral about the service of these men and women who serve. So let me just give you a glimpse of what that medal's like. And I think when you see it, you'll be proud of it, as well as every veteran who receives it. The front of the medal, the obverse, if you will, represents a face of a Chinese American in every uniform, you know, Army, Navy, Marine, Coast Guard, Merchant Marine. I'm sure I'm missing one here. but in Army Air Force. And also, we have one a female, Chinese-American female face that is in a nurse's uniform. So at the front, we're going to represent all the branches as well as the female in the nurse's uniform. On the back side, we will demonstrate that that Chinese-American served in land, sea, and air. And what's demonstrated by that, we have a P-40 Flying Tiger plane. We have a Sherman tank. And then we also have a cruiser that was part of the, of course, the Navy part of it. So the back was that. And, of course, it will have the branch, every branch also noted on the back of that as part of the circular, if you can imagine circular writing around the coin. So the medal, there's one Congressional Gold Medal that is struck by the U.S. Mint. Hopefully that will be done in January next month. And we'll be excited when that happens. But the others are replicas, are bronze replicas that are part of the U.S. Mint. And those will eventually be on sale after, I would say, maybe sometime in the summer, so that others may request this. We have to fill our supply first for our 20. We currently have about 2,200 confirmed recipients for the medal. We anticipate that we may be up to about 3,000 of those medals probably by the middle of next year, once we really get the word out. And I'm anticipating, Jim, that once everybody listens to your podcast, we'll probably triple that number.
So. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Ed.
I have full confidence in you here. So we're very happy to present the medal, and I think, Jim, when you see it, you'll really understand how the Chinese Americans were serving in every area across the world for the peace and protection of the United States during that time.
Ed Gore, thank you for spending some time with Veterans Radio today, and we want to direct our listeners to the website www.caww2.org to get some more information on the Chinese-American World War II Recognition Project and how they might register a friend or a loved one, family member, yeah, for this. And Ed, thanks for spending some time with us today.
It's been a pleasure, Jim. Thank you so much for all of you've done so far for veterans. Thank you.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Veterans Radio needs you. If you like our shows that are informative, surprising stories, and relevant information on what's happening at the VA and the military, we'd like your support. Individual support of $5 to $50 a month or corporate sponsorship of $1,000 to $10,000 would be welcomed. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsorship or support tab, pay online, and keep Veterans Radio on the air.